You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 217A by Rudolf Steiner, addresses and essays that he gave to the youth. It's called Youth and the Etheric Heart. Rudolf Steiner speaks to the younger generation, translated by Catherine Krieger. This is part 5, entitled Anthroposophy and the Youth Movement, Discussion and Question and Answer Session, during an independent anthroposophical higher education course, given at Stuttgart on September 8th, 1921. We see the Catholic youth movement as our most determined opponent, and we would like to ask you, Dr. Steiner, to speak in more detail about that. We imagine our work in the anthroposophical movement as follows. While recognizing that we need to increase our knowledge, we see our specific task as fostering community. We want to continue with communal activities, such as evening gatherings, hikes, festivals, and so forth. But we will gradually allow them to be pervaded and transformed by the spirit of anthroposophy. Here, too, we would like to ask you for specific suggestions. We imagine inviting younger members of the Anthroposophical Society, students, and others to our gatherings. In conclusion, I would like to ask a practical question. Is it possible for a young person from the youth movement to serve as sponsor for someone seeking to join the Anthroposophical Society? Greeting. First of all, I would like to thank Dr. Steiner on behalf of all of us for agreeing to meet with us in spite of his very busy schedule. The suggestions he gave us at Easter have continued to work in us. We heard little from each other in the meantime, but when we met here and began to talk together, we noticed that each of us had come a bit further. Some problems that still existed at Easter are no longer problems. Already today we arrived at some concrete conclusions. We believe that our unique position as mediators between anthroposophy and the youth movement results in specific tasks for us in both movements. We want to bring anthroposophy to the youth movement, which is probably best done on a one-to-one basis. This individual activity, however, will be supported and promoted by more official collective activity. Our aim is to establish a network of representatives throughout Germany with its center in Tübingen. These representatives will meet with young anthroposophists in their area, attend youth movement conferences, and take advantage of their personal connections to distribute written material. In addition, an article on the youth movement and anthroposophy will appear in an anthroposophical periodical. The representatives will work closely with the main association. Rudolf Steiner. Before I answer your practical question, let me address your last point about bringing anthroposophy to the youth movement. To do this, you will need to have real insight into prevailing inner and outer conditions. For the most part, you are already aware of the history of the anthroposophical movement. From the very beginning, our movement had to take realistic possibilities into account. There was no other way for it to work. In the early stages of the anthroposophical movement, humankind was not really ready for it, but we could not wait for universal readiness to get the movement started. Nonetheless, there were some people who had been searching for something out of the indeterminate depths of their souls, and some of these people had not yet found theosophy and mysticism. Some of them did not know that anthroposophy existed, yet they longed for something more profound than what their lives offered. For example, I was once invited to attend a meeting of a club whose members all had this longing, though they differed widely in their abilities and education. So I went because I had more time than I do now, and I made a strange discovery. At the club, to my surprise, I recognized a number of people who had attended my lectures at the Berlin Workers' College, where I was then teaching. The longing I mentioned was present everywhere, and we depended on it. Without it, the anthroposophical movement would have gone nowhere. At that time, it was impossible to do things the way we do today. It was difficult, however, to make anthroposophy understandable to the people who had this longing. Many of them were unable to follow, and they wanted something else. Nonetheless, there were always a few who could follow, and they became this movement. As a result, however, our movement still shows traces of its childhood illnesses, unclear mystical striving and the like, which you can also still find here. Diverse individuals want to hear about subjects of concern to them. Suppose, for example, that someone seeking the answer to a medical question makes the acquaintance of an anthroposophist, who tells him to read this or that verse from Dr. Steiner's Calendar of the Soul. Furthermore, the anthroposophist tells him that Steiner habitually shows you something other than what you're looking for, but you will eventually find what you are looking for because it passes from the verse over to you. We had to depend on such incidents, and we should not forget that in its early stages the anthroposophical movement had rough edges that did not make a good impression at all. That also had to be taken into account. We would have gotten nowhere by beating our heads against the wall. Have no illusions about that. Of course, we had to count on the intrinsic longings of modern youth. But as you become more involved in the anthroposophical movement, you must not lose sight of the fact that the anthroposophical movement itself is ready to break with old biases. By now, we can manage without them, and it is quite possible to break away from everything that is materialistic. This is what I wanted to say initially, in the hope of avoiding having you say that anthroposophists are awful people, which would be quite possible from your perspective. As to your question about building community, of course we do not prohibit hiking together, in fact we encourage it. Building community, when carried by the spirit of anthroposophy, can assume all kinds of different forms. You talk about it as if it were something very new, but you must not forget that we old folks were also young once, and even in our day there were people who wanted to build community. I still remember a circle we formed in Berlin. In doctrinaire terms, perhaps it was only a clique, but even cliques can have worthy goals, and every community begins with a clique. The community-building process attracts all sorts of hangers-on, depending on the character of the individuals involved. The very name of our group in Berlin was calculated to raise the hackles of bourgeois materialists. We called ourselves the, in quotes, criminals table. Otto Erich Hartleben was one of our members. I do not mean to say that we went around breaking into houses or anything of the sort. I mention this only to illustrate that the community-building impulse, as you yourself expressed, did not begin with a modern youth movement. There is no reason why members of the youth movement cannot sponsor their fellow members who wish to join the Anthroposophical Society. That is certainly possible. But this leads me to your other question. You were completely justified in introducing the question of the Catholic youth movement into the discussion. You must be extremely careful with regard to that movement. Never lose sight of the possibility that you could be influenced in one direction or the other. Many of the individuals in the Catholic youth movement are hopeful and capable people. On the other hand, the greatest mistake you could possibly make would be to fall into the Catholic youth movement as such, because it is not based on the needs of young people themselves. Let me describe the difficulty in just a few words. The entire youth movement came together on the basis of the needs of individuals. What holds it together is nothing more than what lives in the hearts of individuals. That is not the case with the Catholic youth movement. Unlike any other truly future-oriented movement, the Catholic youth movement has been tremendously consistent in championing an element that has remained static, through tradition and so forth, throughout humankind's development. The youth movement must be decentralized. Of necessity, however, the Catholic youth movement is centralized. The greatest danger is that you will succumb to Catholic principles yourselves. Do not underestimate the possibility. Suppose a movement appears saying, quote, as good Catholics, we want to do whatever it takes to bring people back to a living Christianity, and we do not want to have anything to do with the Jesuits, close quote. This may sound quite tolerable, To gain the right perspective, however, you must know that such a movement can be set up with programs against the Jesuits, but it can all be changed by some Jesuit father. Part of the Jesuits' program is to recruit and enlist its own opponents into its ranks. You would not believe how many people fall for it, but just look at the young Catholic movement of many years ago. They rallied against Jesuitism, but 15 years later, they were in the Jesuit camp. This is something that may not be evident from looking at the movement's program. In this situation, you will never be able to see clearly unless you are alert to the fact that the Jesuits are broad-minded in a certain respect, because they reckon with the most powerful of their opponents. You cannot be careful enough to avoid falling into the Catholic youth movement as such. When I meet people whom I once knew well and with whom I had a lot in common, I find that many of them have fallen under the spell of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has a tremendous power of attraction, and its spell is very strong. Taking all of this into account, you need to be prepared for a trap. That is why I believe you will be able to move forward only if you guard your independence zealously in relationship to the Catholic youth movement. You must realize that your collective strength depends on finding people who have nothing up their sleeve and absolutely cannot be influenced. You will find a brand on the Jesuits, nor can you expect them to show who they really are. I'm telling you this simply to describe the situation and to warn you that you may find yourselves in rough water if you are indulgent toward the Catholic youth movement, even though it is now up in arms against the Jesuits. Check out where these people are in 15 years and see where they have landed. An article on the Anthroposophical youth movement would accomplish several different things. As I have often told you, much of what comes from the youth movement arises from deep within the human soul. This is very important, and most of it can be understood only by someone who grasps what the youth movement is. I can well imagine that such an article would have very positive effects, and it would certainly be good if it were written by young people. But there is a type of opposition that goes hand in hand with individualism, for better or for worse, and you must be prepared for it, though it may not become outwardly evident. And although many people say anthroposophists do only what they are ordered to do, in reality, individualism is nowhere as pronounced as it is in the Anthroposophical Society. Each member of the society does only what he or she really wants to do. This has distinct disadvantages. When you are dealing with a movement, it is quite true that you need some sort of common ground. And when you choose your representatives, you must make sure they will not quarrel among themselves, but are really people who put the greater whole above personal issues. This will always be necessary in the youth movement. Evaluate your people carefully, because you need to know and trust your representatives. This is what little I have to say to your questions. Question: how should we foster community? Rudolf Steiner. You know, if you grasp the spirit of anthroposophy, you will come to understand that individual community-building activities are of secondary importance. In the case of already extant individual communities, it is certainly good to cultivate them out of their own essential being. It is also good for them to continue doing what they have always done. Adding this or that to your agenda is not the point. Anthroposophy can work within any existing form. It is best not to attempt any outer changes in what you have been doing so far. Just think about how to add anthroposophy. As an esoteric force, anthroposophy could gradually find its way into everything. Comment from a participant. Anthroposophists always object that through hiking we fall into rapture. Rudolf Steiner. Well, really, hiking as such is not an activity that promotes rapture or passion. Hiking is a rapturous activity only if the participants themselves are already rapturous. Comment from a participant. Anthroposophists in particular always accuse the youth movement of being incapable of any activities other than hikes and celebrations. Rudolf Steiner. You must understand that the Anthroposophical movement is also made up of individuals, and its founding members are not predisposed to hiking. They have totally different ways of being and working together. You cannot expect them to have much sympathy for the Wandervogel. It is only natural that they will have all sorts of complaints, but that is nothing to worry about. It certainly does not mean that you need to give up hiking. The Anthroposophical movement could have developed just as easily among the Wandervogel. We must always keep the whole breadth and scope of Anthroposophy in mind and not get stuck in details. We cannot expect the Anthroposophical movement to accommodate all sorts of wild fanatics, such as people who say, quote, "We don't need to think at all. All we have to do is go hiking," close quote. I do not mean to suggest that all efforts at community building take such extreme forms, but many do. The Anthroposophical movement was initiated by people whose feelings were very different from those of modern young people. Although it is quite appropriate for young people to maintain this movement, it did not appear first among the young. From its inception, it was somewhat elderly. There was nothing youthful about it. I encountered a characteristic example of this elderly attitude in one of my first lectures. I spoke in my normal tone of voice, and afterward, one of these elderly people approached me and said, quote, "You drive away the spirituality when you talk so loudly. You mustn't speak so loudly when you're talking about spiritual science," close quote. Incidentally, this person later became one of Anthroposophy's most loyal adherents and remained so until his death. It is best to simply avoid clashing with this elderly attitude. You do not need to confront it. Simply go about your business. Question. Dr. Steiner, could you share your thoughts about solstice celebrations? Rudolf Steiner. At Easter, I advised you to stick to realities that are accepted by anthroposophists, but can be experienced everywhere. And I told you about the effects of a longing that appeared in the late 1880s, emerging from the depths of human souls, and then formed the basis of the modern youth movement. In earlier times, people perceived the existence of very real powers that worked in human beings, and even right into the seasons and changes of the year. Their effects were set in place at the summer solstice. You will grasp the full scope of what I say if you can imagine these ancient times, when people related to natural laws in very different ways. Because they were very closely connected to nature as a whole, the thoughts they grasped at the summer solstice were most fruitful in terms of expressing these laws. We must turn to somewhat radical means of expressing ourselves if we want to formulate our own thoughts about what was then alive in human beings. The people of ancient times thought of how bulls were led out to inseminate the cows at certain times of the year, and they imagined that the human soul also had to be exposed to fructification at certain seasons. Now, in fact, the earth sleeps in summer. Its condition is then like that of a sleeping human being. The earth sleeps in summer and is awake in winter. During sleep, our ether bodies are at their most active, and the same is true of the earth in this state. That was when people felt most connected to the earth, and so they held their biggest celebrations around the time of the summer solstice. In the south, however, in Africa and so on, the winter solstice was considered the greatest festival. These celebrations were attempts to come into contact with what emanated from the earth's waking ether body, in polar contrast to the temporal experience of the human spirit. All of our time-related habits are of similar origin. In those times, awareness of all such things appeared in people as a feeling for certain natural laws. It is quite true that this awareness is now resurfacing. It was painful for me when some professor came up with the idea of doing away with Easter as an astronomically determined movable feast and fixing its date on April 1. He thought this was a really good idea, but it would have eliminated our emotional connection to events in the entire cosmos. Our human sensibility would perish if cut off from cosmic events. because this connection keeps humans alive and young. If you feel the need to experience the spirit of the solstice and know that this was once done out of the noblest feelings, it is good to encourage celebrating the festival. But it is important to do so concretely, knowing that the summer solstice is different from the winter solstice, and to think about this difference on such occasions. Question. About the ordering of life. In German, Lebensgestaltung, Lebensreform. Rudolf Steiner. We will be able to have an impact on life only if the anthroposophical movement manages to intervene successfully in society as a whole. Of course, as long as the movement remains at all sectarian, it will also be called a sect. Now that anthroposophy has discovered methods of healing, people will come wanting to be healed. Meanwhile, however, people also stand up in the name of some political party and rail against the law that permits anything like the anthroposophical movement to exist. This is a real concrete example. People want to encourage anthroposophy in private, but they shy away from its public manifestations. But anthroposophy can and must work on a large scale. Only then will it be accepted. Individuals must have the courage to present the anthroposophical spirit to the public at large. This is why I strove from the very beginning to establish an anthroposophical therapeutic institute, a research institute, and so forth. Anthroposophy must be the foundation of our work. This will not be possible if current trends persist. The impact also depends on the strength of will of publicly active individuals who base themselves on anthroposophy. Abstractly speaking, it can always be said that we cannot hope to accomplish our intentions in the next few years. When I first went public with my thoughts on the threefold character of the body social, people came to me and told me that my timing was bad. It could take 100 years to implement. All I can say is that if everyone thought like that when contemplating action, nothing would ever happen at all. That is not the right attitude. For me, the question is simply, what ought to be done? I must say the anthroposophical movement would never have gotten so far as it has if I had not repeatedly asked myself that question. Acting on the basis of anthroposophy requires cultivating one's will. We need people who will take anthroposophy as their foundation without reservation. The more, the better. Our job is not to consider how long it will take for people to become receptive to our ideas. Our job is to work to make them receptive. We must do everything possible, as if that receptivity were already a reality. People always wonder whether we can actually do that. This is just evidence of a certain amount of fear. People are afraid to act. It is like reflecting on whether one can actually approach the essence of the thing itself through thinking. I imagine it in this way. Here is a bowl of soup, and lying next to it is a spoon. The spoon is your thinking, and the bowl of soup the thing itself. What happens if you stop to ponder whether the spoon you have been given has a real relationship to the soup, or what will happen if you take the spoon in your hand and eat? This type of questioning will never satisfy your hunger. You must simply pick up the spoon and eat. Question. About the adult education movement. Rudolf Steiner. I have become convinced that nothing positive will come of the adult education movement. The instructors simply take the developments of older cultures and graft them onto adult education. Would it be better if we founded institutes of adult education based on modern culture? The instructors should attempt to imbue their courses with life to the greatest extent possible, as I did when I was teaching in Berlin. Basically, though, it is a waste of effort. It would not be right to stop making an effort altogether. But we must realize that our work is contributing to decline, not ascent. I said this not only because instructors choose contents with no future viability, but also to show that we must get beyond our current methods of instruction. The underlying spirit is more important than we think. Attempts at adult education may be based on noble principles, but principles have no effect. Very, very clever people imagine that if they get 10 or 12 individuals together and figure out an ideal school program, some good will come of it. They work out the best possible programs for adult education courses. But the program is not the important point. People are coming up with ideal programs all the time. In a school, however, the important thing is to do everything possible with your specific students. You cannot stick to any program. We have to realize that we must extricate ourselves from this way of thinking and base ourselves on real life. From spiritual science, we must acquire a sense for life's realistic possibilities. We must not function in programmatic terms. We have to express ourselves in such terms, but they are not the point. The point is to imbue every subject with life instead of with dead matter, which is what is happening in adult education. You might say, well, I want to work somewhere. I have a mission. I want to bring to people who I believe are capable of achieving a certain level of culture. Let us call it level A. Now, everyone knows that A is not the best that can be achieved. We would really need A plus B. But since that is not possible for the people you are working with, you decide it is better to achieve only A. But if you look at it that way, you do not even reach level A, but only A minus B. Question. About Mach Lamberti. Rudolf Steiner. You will find similar people everywhere. Let me remind you of Heusser, who is active around here. To the consternation of various people, he showed up at Siegler House and gave a very vehement sermon. But let me warn you about these people. They work almost hypnotically rather than through healthy reason. Their energy is intense, but it is crazy energy, not healthy energy. It is important to realize that any movement seeking a broader audience must be healthy. If the youth movement intends to serve humankind, it too must be healthy. We are looking at phenomena that develop energy, but in this case, it is the energy of madness, or of animals. The energy is much less important than what it expresses. In reality, we can penetrate to the core of a subject through the spirit of anthroposophy only by excluding all traces of hypnotic suggestion. We must not allow ourselves to be overpowered by such energy, though I must admit I have seen it enable people of very limited abilities to do incredible things. Especially in a youth movement, you must be on your guard against mental intoxication. That is how you should relate to such phenomena. I would like to point out a very simple means of protecting yourselves. In all movements, including the anthroposophical movement, there are individuals with a terrible mystical bent. An old friend who lives in Rome once said to me, quote, "Oh, anthroposophists are all so above it all, and their faces are so long that their jaws are in their laps." Close quote. People such as these are everywhere. That is the one extreme. The other is the boundless superficiality that allows people to gloss over everything. For you, the important thing is to hold yourself together, not to be overly influenced by other people's energy. There is only one way to do that, and it is something everyone needs. Humor. All these long faces and all this superficiality are equally harmful. Humor is what you need to put them in their place. If you can laugh at them, you see them for what they are worth. I do not mean that you should be ironic or sarcastic, but simply see them for what they are. For the sake of healthy judgment, humor is needed everywhere. Instead of becoming like the long faces, the youth movement should encourage really healthy humor. I have met surprisingly many pessimists in the youth movement, and their pessimism puts them at risk. We are all so clever nowadays that we do not even notice that our whole culture is going mad. Just ask those, in quotes, mystics. They will tell you all about how dangerous the outer world is and how we expose ourselves to risks with every draft of air. If people were really so dependent on outer influences, everyone alive today would be hysterical. we would all be powerless to confront every draft of air. Thank God that is not what people are like. The important thing is to cultivate a higher sensibility, so you can feel every breath of air, but not be blown over by it. Question. About Fidus and Gertrude Prellwitz. Rudolf Steiner. Some people write books and make public appearances without any real experience. Fidus and Gertrude Prellwitz are classic examples. Such people know absolutely everything, or so they believe. For example, they know what real anthroposophists are like. They are typical of modern intellectuals. Gertrude Prellwitz is no different from the rest of them, and so humor is the only appropriate response to the situation. The same is true of the other extreme, the people who come every few minutes saying, "Oh dear, something terrible has happened. My child is developing a very unnatural sexuality." Well, if you ask the child's age, it turns out that he or she is only 5 years old. Believe me, sexuality comes out only at puberty. And a child really makes no distinction between scratching his itchy nose and scratching somewhere else. Reading sexuality into everything produces some dreadful theories. It is just nonsense to see erotic activity in a 5-year-old. In such cases, healthy thinking is more important than theories, because most theories are just nonsense. All people need to do is consider how terribly short-sighted the conclusions are. In some cultures, eating was accompanied by feelings of shame, so it would be possible to develop similar theories about eating. But you will find that if you are really involved in life's far-reaching issues, you will not have time for this type of theorizing. Comment from a participant. These issues ought to be taken more seriously. Rudolf Steiner. I have to say, the way you asked the question was like building a house and not even having the floor in place yet. Comment from a participant. Muck Lamberty bases his craft on art and so on, and the Neue Schar wants to reshape life from the ground up. Rudolf Steiner. What is the reality of the situation? In the real world, it is only possible to grow forward, not backward. Thinking about sexuality will not move us forward. If the foundations are sound, healthy sexuality will develop all by itself. It simply needs to be incorporated into life as a whole in the right way. It appears in individuals at a certain age, but it also develops in a specific cultural context. All we can do is allow it to emerge naturally. If the other aspects of our life are healthy, a healthy sexuality will result. We do a great deal of damage by attempting to program this aspect of our lives. If healthy prerequisites are in place, it develops appropriately in the context of society as a whole. I cannot count the number of people who have come to me asking about the possibility of prenatal education. The theories about it are simply awful, as if we were breeding children in hothouses. What is important is that the mother is healthy, that she leads a healthy life. If the mother stays healthy, the baby will be fine. It just does not make sense to ask such questions. They get asked only because we are living with a surplus of intellectual productivity. People need subjects to write about and are not willing to wait for actual experience. So they write. And in some cases, movements develop based on what they have written. But these movements lead nowhere. Comment from a participant. This movement developed quite unconsciously, not as the result of thinking. People are living together in small groups and looking for a certain natural lifestyle. Rudolf Steiner. What do you mean by a certain natural lifestyle? Let us assume that there is a little circle of farm boys here, a circle of decadent nobility there, and over here a group of ordinary healthy people. Each group develops differently and leads a life of its own. You cannot say that any one theory applies equally to all of them. The point is that development is always based on a specific foundation. I do not want to be sarcastic about these issues, but it does not make sense to think about how a newborn relates to sexuality. at the right moment we need to have the courage to identify what is right and what is possible. That is why it is so important to develop a sense of humor in this regard. Aristotle pointed out this middle route between the rigid tightness of Philistine materialistic values and loose dissoluteness. Comment from a participant. We need to make very clear distinctions here because Muck Lamberti and Gertrude Prellwitz are not the same at all. Humankind learns about these subjects from older people. Stammler and Fidus have spread false stories about Muck. Muck sought out young people with whom he hoped to demonstrate that something exists that is equal from human being to human being. Folk dancing was one of the outer forms they used to express this. People flocked to him, but left equally quickly. The hypnotic effect was short-lived. Those who remained represent a legitimate spiritual force. The artisans community is one of the healthiest movements. The people in Naumburg are attempting to develop an economy based entirely on brotherliness and to be independent of everything they repudiate. The sexuality they developed was healthy until Gertrude Prellwitz intervened with her theories. But by now the crisis has been overcome. The people there have moved beyond Gertrude Prellwitz, and their spiritual movement is merging into anthroposophy. Rudolf Steiner. It is always possible to see the good side of things, but it is important to maintain a necessary perspective in this case. For example, it is an undisputed fact that some of the people who came to the anthroposophical movement from spiritualist circles have become capable supporters. But this is no reason to defend spiritualism. In the Naumburg case, we must take the location into account. Naumburg has a history of such movements, but they come and go. It is easy to take a very one-sided view of such instances. Naumburg proves nothing, just as it proves nothing when such people find their way to a student movement. Although I cannot defend spiritualism, I also cannot deny that some capable people have come from that movement, just as they could have come from anywhere else. We cannot base our opinions on such factors. Muck Lamberti wanted to make humankind happy. He stood for purity and artisanship and so forth. He arranged for itinerant teachers to live together with small groups of young people. He stood for purity, and he fathered two children out of wedlock by choice. The note-taker was unable to record the chaotic discussion that ensued. Rudolf Steiner. It is certainly necessary for us to engage in anthroposophy as such, and it seems unlikely that we have to fear any such thing. We must start from the beginnings we have discussed today. Question. An educational question. How do anthroposophy and the Waldorf School relate to the existence of independent school communities and rural schools where teachers relate personally to their students as friends? I have heard anthroposophists say that these schools must be avoided because they attempt to realize an antiquated educational ideal by emulating the ancient Greeks. Rudolf Steiner. This is the situation. The Waldorf School is based not on a specific program, but on a science of education exclusively derived from anthroposophy's insights into human nature. It places the highest value on treating individuals as they want to be treated in their most profound depths of being. Children are not overtly asked what they want, though they are asked this on a certain level. This is the main point. Related to it is the fact that the Waldorf School is truly a democratic, comprehensive school. It places working-class children next to children from the upper classes. To the greatest possible extent, it accomplishes the goals of a so-called democratic, comprehensive school. For the rest, we take the position that we live in a world that can be restored to health only by adopting major, all-embracing cultural impulses that are impossible to implement through countermeasures that remain isolated exceptions to the rule. My point is that we must accept what already exists. For example, my educational efforts are adapted to the relevant circumstances of the location. If I have an opportunity to found an anthroposophical school in a particular city, I do so based on actual conditions there. Of course, there's nothing to be said against the adoption by a rural boarding school of our educational methods. On the other hand, I cannot believe that such schools have lasting benefits to society as a whole, because they take young people out of their social context and educate them in isolation. This factor is not taken into account, but we must always have an eye for the whole. For example, an excellent physician once said to me, quote, "This man does not have a normal heart. We must do something about it," close quote. My response was, quote, "If you fix his heart, he will not survive, because his entire body has adapted to the abnormality," close quote. For similar reasons, I have concerns about rural boarding schools. Taking young people out into the country allows them to develop a positive sense of community in isolation. But these schools would prove their worth only if their students can later hold their own within the body social as a whole. The entire body social must become healthy. Anthroposophically based discussions of such issues cannot be the same as discussions in any other context. But I assure you that we are not being one-sided. I recruited an excellent teacher from a rural boarding school to teach in Stuttgart. He likes it better here, so he must find it an improvement over his previous situation. We must be able to recognize the good wherever it exists, and we must not believe that we have a program that can be imposed everywhere. Comment from a participant. In these schools where young people live together, it would be crucial to foster a lifestyle that is not estranged from the rest of the world. Rudolf Steiner. And do not forget the individual. Later, these young people will need to be able to function as individualities again. If you were to study the issue, you would find that rural boarding schools tend to foster self-serving characters who think everywhere else has to be just like school. They become terribly critical social eccentrics, and nothing in the world seems right to them. We must take care not to want the impossible. What was I supposed to do? If I had started from an abstraction, I would never have founded the Waldorf School. Boarding schools, such as those run by Winneken and Lietz, can do anything they want, so they are easy to get started. Essentially, rural boarding schools function only on the basis of isolation from society. Such schools will not have many working-class students. Comment from a participant. I used to teach at an independent school that is now disbanding, but we had more scholarships than other schools. Wealthy parents paid tuition surcharges that allowed us to offer scholarships to poor children. Rudolf Steiner. The anti-social aspect of private schools, even the Waldorf School, is that even they have to be financed somehow. The situation will improve only when we succeed in implementing the threefold ordering of the social body. Comment from a participant. Boarding schools emulate family life, but the structure of the modern family is not always the most desirable. Rudolf Steiner. We must always consider the reality of the situation. For example, boarding schools have always existed in England. People there know the light and dark sides of boarding school life. Rudolf Steiner concludes the address. End of part 5.